you have all kinds of options open to you. Right? You're not worried about the goyim coming in and causing terrorists. So where should you light? So don't mean light in the window. But many say no, it's just light in the doorway. In the Pesach HaChatzer. It's a big question. According to Shulchan Aruch, it's not the Pesach HaChatzer, but the Pesach HaMavui. What does Pesach HaMavui mean? The old days they used to have following zoning.
Who says this?
Shulchan Aruch. Window. Many say no, it's just like in the doorway. In the Pesach HaChatzer. It's a big question. According to Shulchan Aruch, it's not the Pesach HaChatzer, but the Pesach HaMavui. What does Pesach HaMavui mean? The old days they used to have following zoning.
Who says this?
Shulchan Aruch. Wow. So it's no chalk. Okay, whatever it is, you'll just take it from the fake.
How do you spell it?
Zoning, Z-O. Moment. Mem, Vase, Vav, Yud. Right. They had houses opening into courtyards, courtyards opening into alleyways, and alleyways opening into the big street. That's just the way they had it. They don't really have that kind of system today. So, according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's going to light on the opening of your house into your courtyard, but rather from your courtyard into the alleyway. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Yes. Not at the opening of your house to the courtyard, but rather the opening from the courtyard to the alleyway. A little further removed from your actual dwelling quarters. And the question becomes, what is the equivalent of that in an apartment house? What's the equivalent? For the Bris Mirov, the fellow of the Bris Mirov, he lives in Yerushalayim, the big apartment house, he thought that the equivalent of that should really be the front lobby, the downstairs lobby. You mean go into a building, you don't have to work tonight, it's wrong. It's similar. You go in, there's a lobby downstairs. In other words, you consider the stairwells and the little, you know, the landings to be one big chatzer, right? Including the front lobby of the building. And then the house, let's consider that out being out to the small little street. It's called a mabon. You know how it is, man, show, right? One thing, these are the gula, these are the little dinky street. Takes it to, I don't know, Malchei Yisrael. That's the big street. So, he felt, strictly speaking, one should light the menorah downstairs. In the front lobby, if you live in the third floor, you light the downstairs. Chazon Ish disagreed. He said, nothing doing. He said, a chotzer was a much more private kind of an area. The laundry, I don't know what they do there. He's thought that the hallways of today have a status of a mavui, not of a chotzer. And therefore he felt, you know, if you're going to light at the doorway, light at the doorway of your apartment going into the hall, not the doorway of the lobby downstairs going into the small street. There's a big dispute. Why am I mentioning this to you? It's irrelevant to us anyway. We light all in our house anyway. The difference is very simple. You justify lighting in the Stern College dorm. They only light upstairs. It's ridiculous. They're afraid of a fire. So what do they light? Downstairs, right? Am I right? The first lobby downstairs, the first floor? Am I correct? So according to this, I always say, we have a brisk yeshiva. According to the brisk room, that's where you're supposed to light. That's right. And I wanted to suggest that even the Chazon Ish would agree light downstairs. I'll tell you why. Because the dorm, technically we run around up there, but I understand, I'm just getting from uptown, the dorm is much more private, if you will, than a regular apartment house. You see, I know what happens over here, but people are running around in all kinds of states of dress or undress. But you wouldn't walk around in the hallway of an apartment. It's more Hamish, I have to say. It's more of a living space than it is in the apartment. Am I correct?
Yeah.
So that's why I thought it was justified. I don't see the yeshiva administration does with reasons of their own. They're afraid of fire. but I think nonetheless there's a basis for it in halacha, like downstairs. What do they do in the Israel and in the seminaries, in the law school? What do they do? Also like downstairs in the lobby. Sometimes they better tell it like the dining room. Dining room. That even though the dining room is in a different building or a different area, so you don't walk out through the dining room, that's a problem. Now it does say in the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim, based on the Gemara, that Mokam Achila Ika, the place of where you eat is the main, is considered your main locus where you live. How should I say it in a nice way? You live where you eat. Not where you sleep, you live where you eat. It's a telling point for the Jewish Shabbat. You live where you eat. But that's only true that Mepharshim say if you eat privately. If you have a room where you sleep and a room where you eat, so it's not contiguous the way you live where you eat. But if you live if you sleep privately and you eat publicly, no one's around, so most Poskim say you live where you sleep. That's your private quarters. So I'm not so excited when they have the candle lighting in the dining room. Unless the dining room happens to be a place where you pass by when you're walking out of the door. It's no worse than the lobby of Brookdale Hall or Morgue or Rupin have up there, same thing. People like, you know, it's all kinds of places. They're crazy. I mean, they're a bit wrong. I don't know, it's in the street. That's absurd. I was trying at the highest cherry picker to see how high can you go. The light of menorah they would have brought. It's a bracha levatala. Because it's nerish obey, so you can't light a menorah in the middle of the street. It's not a private residence. Rashi said if you're on a boat, there's no obligation of nerchanek. You have no house for that day, it's finished. Happens very frequently when people go on boats. What I call a boat? El Al 747. That's a boat. You see this guy trying to light chanukah on an El Al. Crazy. That's like Kunis the Fushes Mamish. Aside from that, the pub is a brothel of a toilet. That's not a house. And if you had, if you had a train with a Pullman car where they give you a suite or Queen Elizabeth II, you know, that's maybe like a house. Practical about a rowboat, you know. But an El Al plane, I'm thinking, maybe first class. I've never been there. I've been there. Maybe first class. I'd be considered a house. I don't know. But when they squeeze like a sardine, that's no house. People go to Israel on Hanukkah, so very common. Very common to go to Israel on Hanukkah. But this time, this is late Hanukkah. You know what that means? I don't want to say all the things, but it falls out. Hanukkah time. So a lot of people go to Israel on Hanukkah time. So they're finished. No house. So if they can arrange to light at home before they leave, before they catch the plane, that's better. How early can you light? So the ideal time to light, as you said before, was after the stars come out, which is approximately half an hour after the sunset, which is about 5 o'clock in New York. If you're really stuck, you can light from what we call Shkia, which is 4:30, approximately in New York. If you're really, 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 really stuck, some possible say you can light as early as Plag Hamincha, which is about 3:30 in New York. The same as you do on Arab Shabbos. I would like to plug them in. So I'm saying it will always work if you're really in a fix. It's a matter of excuse. Yes?
I just don't understand what you mean
when
you say for
Pater.
Like, is that because
everybody
doesn't do that? Or?
Yeah, if you have no house, if you have no house, you have to put in a mezuzah. If you have no house, you put it. You have no mezuzah, it's all finished. You have no house. Then I'm going to spend a half of $1,000 in a house and put in a mezuzah.
No, but like, they have a place where they put
on
it, it's just they're not in that place right now.
So, they can get someone else to light for them. That's true. You can afford the shliach to light for you in your house. You're on the plane, someone else light for you. Yeah, okay. Yes? What kind of hotel do you mean? Oh, I said that's the plaza. The plaza. Seems to me that if you light downstairs, I've been in the Plaza lobby, it seems to me that you would be a kosher lighting because that's the way you walk in and out. You go past the elevators, right?
Yeah.
And you light downstairs. In your room, in the plaza, I guess if you stay in the room while the candles are lit, as bother you. And why you don't they come after you? Oh, it's like an inquisition. They remember to go up and down, they control the halls. Yeah, I have some Marranos in my family. Not kidding. There was a congregation in the room, they stayed there, they wasn't leaving alone. They stayed there. Then they felt a bang on the door. And blow it out, put it in the closet, and lock the fucking Marranos. He goes, can you do that? Why is security? Inquisition. Yes?
In the outside apartments.
Yeah, what, do they have a lobby?
Yeah, but it's like,
what?
We should be lighting the light
on something
like that.
No.
So
light
your room? Should
we light
in the room or should we light
well,
in the doorway?
It's a regular apartment, light in your room. Like, I like my room. I live in Riverdale, so I like the room. You have an apartment.
You should light in the doorway, in the hall.
That they won't let you do either. Light in your room. Yes. Problem. Well, where are you sleeping? In your own house. You're sleeping in your house, you're eating in someone else's house. So your house is where you're sleeping. What you should do is light the Hanukkah menorah. During the week, just make sure to stay half an hour, and then you need to blow it out if you're afraid to leave it, or take a chance to leave it. On Friday night, I mean, the idea would be to do the same thing. Light a relatively smaller candle. Make sure it goes at least a half an hour after the sun sets. No, I'll take that back. An hour after the sun sets, right? Half an hour until the taste goes off, another half an hour beyond. So you light it half an hour before, so that's a total of an hour and a half. And don't go to dinner until then. Most people don't come from shul until an hour after the shki anyway. So like, place the time, shalom aleichem, make kiddush. So, that'll be the best. If not, you leave it on the table. You stay there all out.
But
you have to, like, drink it, or can't be burning? No, you're not allowed to drink it. You may not enjoy it. Neighbors are a little kodeshem.
I mean.
Ain't none of
your shoes to
stop it, man. Hello, they want to go up.
If you don't see that after
the stage. Doesn't matter. You have to question for Suminisa, so it's better to stay until we have an hour afterwards. I'm going to come a little bit late for the meal, if it's doable. What if the whole family goes away? Everyone goes away for Shabbos Chanukah. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Should we, like,
speak?
Supposed
to be able to see the camera for half an hour, like, should we stay in the lobby for half an hour? I don't think so. Why did the camera go away? Someone else is going to see it. We'll be walking in and out. No, you should be Pesumanisa for half an hour. So, stir in lobby must have unbelievable Pesumanisa. Right, hundreds of people walking back and forth.
Yeah.
That's correct. Okay. The whole family goes away for Shabbos Chanukah. Could happen. Could happen to you. What happens then? So then we consider the home away from home to be the home. The whole family uproots and goes to someone else's house. Then that's the house. Whether it be for the entire Chanukah, that's the house, or for the day, that's the house. So that's your house, Sean. You know, you have two houses, most of you. One house in the door, one house at home, if you live in New York area for sure. So let's say Chanukah Thursday night or Sunday night. Those are the commuting nights, right? Thursday night you go from the dorm to the house, and Sunday you go from the house to the dorm. So where do you like those nights? So I think you have a choice, in my opinion. You can light either, you're rich, you have two houses. You can light in your, you know, if your weekend getaway home, and you have your city home. Well, the computer have that, right? It's an apartment in the city, and then, you know, the suburban place, they go for weekends. That's selfish. So you have a choice. You have two homes, right, whatever you please. What I don't like is, people that eat, are invited out for a meal, oh, I'm invited out for a meal. And you're not allowed to eat before you light candles. So I light candles at my friend's house, I'm eating supper. Oh, I said it wrong. I think it's a rough one, I told you. It's not your house. In fact, eat supper, it does not make it to your house. Eat, no matter how you get home. See, they set your alarm watch. You know a little trick? No, no one of those watches. Set it for 12 o'clock at night. When you get home, it's a beep, 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 beep. That reminds you, should you light the...
No.
Not
the, how do you light? You can't eat before you light.
The reason you can't eat before you light is you may forget. You appoint an agent to remind you. Permit it to eat. I have an agent for you. Your name is Alarm Clock. Agent Alarm Clock, doesn't forget. Yeah. Another thing, you have someone lying to you first. If someone in there, then you're okay. You're right. Correct? Yes? No, I didn't say that. I have someone to remind you to, again, especially if someone lives in your own parental home, but even if not, for some reason, to get someone to remind you to light it, light it on her. Yes?
Okay,
well,
did you say that you eat, you light when you eat, do you?
I said very much against that.
Against
not
that.
Supposed to light when you eat.
So, with the case that we had before, that you... you're sleeping in your own house, you're eating Shabbos meal by somebody else. You didn't say that you like in their house, did you? No.
Why, we well, not your own house.
How'd you give the example of girls who live in the area and they live in the dining room?
They live in the dining room, I said if they live in the dining room because the dining room was the way out of the building.
No.
Oh no, if not, I'm not so excited about it. And the Gemara, the case called Aksenoi. Aksenoi means someone who was a guest in someone else's house. And he is, there's no one lighting for him in his own house. He's unattached, he has no family. So the Gemara's the case, the Gemara's a suggestion. You know what he can do? He can be Mishtate Pekruta. What does Mishtate Pekruta mean? He gives a penny to the Balabas. Listen, you have me in mind, I should be part of your lighting. This is the Gemara says it's good. Mentioned to you before, the custom is not that way. The custom is if an entire family or a private person, same thing, is a guest in someone else's house, that they light their own candles. Their own candles they light.
They
light their own candles. If someone's going to your house for Shabbos, he's likely to light himself and not to give you a penny.
But with their candles matter?
The question is this legit? The Gemara says you're supposed to give a penny. So, does that mean you can get away with a penny? But you have a right to light on your own? What does that mean? No, you can only give a penny. You have no right to light on your own. It's not really your house, it's just a guest. The custom is to assume that you can light on your own if you so desire. That's Minig Yisrael. You can get away with a penny. You want to light your man. But not a Rav Soloveitchik didn't agree with that necessarily, but the meaning is to light your own.
What constitutes a guest? Like someone who's spending the night somewhere?
Right.
Right, okay.
Okay. Any questions? complicated. Some people here maybe got last week when their Shabbos was similarly complicated. Same general halacha, Ner Ish Ubeiso. How do you define where someone's living? Okay. What do you like? Candles, right? Candles made from what? So ideally, you should use olive oil. Why olive oil? Is the nace to place with olive oil? That makes sense. The nace to place with olive oil, you should be lighting olive oil. If you lit the candles and it blew out, do you fulfill the mitzvah? So it blew out a half an hour after dark, of course. It blew out less than that, 10 minutes after you lit it, it blew out. So, strictly speaking, you already fulfilled the mitzvah anyway. It's called kopsa eino zakakla. If it went out, you don't have to bother with it. Hadlaka osa mitzvah. The lighting itself is a mitzvah. How do you go about the actual lighting? What should you do? How do you do this? See, they make three brachas the first night. Mahadlik, Shasanism, Shabbayonim. Light one candle. Then you light up to eight. And you, the way we've made it is we put the candles in from right to left, and we light from left to right. Shabbos-wise, on Friday, the Ner Tanakh comes before the Ner Shabbos. And Motzi Shabbos, in dispute. Some say Ner Tanakh is first, some say Havdalah is first. What else parts of Hanukkah? You have to say Al Nisim in benching. Shmona Esrei. If you forgot, you don't go back. And what was the custom if a person forgot Al Nisim and he remembered that after he finished benching, after he's already started raching, he can't go back anymore. So you say at the end, Arachamon Uyas Al Nisim, that if laws, Kashem, Shasisal Al Nisim, just read the whole literature. Is a person permitted to pray for a miracle? You're not allowed to pray for a miracle, the Pesukim say. Someone is very sick, you're not allowed to pray for a miracle. Pray for something which is medically conceivable, which is unlikely, the odds are against it. Someone's already beyond help medically, you're not permitted to pray for a miracle. So it's COVID. Yeah. The answer is, this is not a private miracle. Rather, it is a miracle for the entire nation. Any last question? Yes?
About the Motze Shabbos, about saying Havdalah first or lighting their Hanukkah, how come we wouldn't just go by Tadr
B'Shem? Very good, excellent. Tadr B'Shem and Tadr means what? Havdalah's first.
Right.
Right. Yeah, but some say for Sumanisa is more important. one of those.
It still happens in England.
Sorry?
It still happens in England.
Yeah, it's on the porch. It's on first. Yeah. Yes, I'm listening.
But how do we pack?
Whatever you want. Three. Whatever you want. Rabbi Feld has a book on this called Law de Yeshurun. He writes that if someone is in a different time zone, have we discussed that? Different time zone, then he cannot fulfill the mitzvah by the lighting in the home. Well, you see, it all depends. In other words, if I quote, when a person is away from home in a place where the time for the Hanukkah lights is later than at home. So when they lit at home, it was still day. He lives in New York and he's visiting for his business in Chicago. So when they lit, as soon as they lit in his house, just, you know, at the right time, let's take California, make it more dramatic. So when they lit in New York at 5 o'clock, in California it was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it seems from the same here that for Marshall, no good. I thought last year we learned that it was good. So I don't know. He's a source of really lots of crime. I think we may have that in my house. Yeah, the face. You know, right. Yeah.
It's not the same as
in
your
guest house. What
does
that mean?
If you're on a business trip, you're not
in
your own home. You're
in
like
someone
else's
home.
Like
home
with
themselves. Right.
So,
no, this is a different issue. The issue is, we said earlier that a person can always fulfill the actual halacha, the core mitzvah, which is being done, performed in his own house, and I suggest that it's true even if you're in a different time zone, which I wasn't sure about last year, but I think he sort of came to that conclusion. Now I see here he seems to have a different conclusion. Whoops. Again, he's against me. I said before that if a person may appoint the messenger to light the lights, right, that's what we said, right? And I add, it's only true if someone from the house is present. Whoops. What's this? I'll look this one up. What kind of little do I'm learning again? We're learning together. I don't remember this. What is the prize we have over here for us? Right. Roommates should each light their own lights. In other words, if you are, you see, if you are a member of someone else's household, so then you are considered, you know, let's say, fulfilling the mitzvah through that other person. He quotes it from Rav Moshe that roommates, no one can light for the other. That's a chiddush, not so simple. I'm not sure why he said that, it's just what he quotes. I really should withdraw everything I said until now, but maybe he's only being should in the sense of the ideal. opposed to the absolutely mandatory. That's pretty obvious. I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know how to read this. Here he quotes, and the dorm is light, and the dorm and not in the dining room. Whoops, I lose again. He says, you can light in the plane.
We got a plane?
Whoa. I don't know, that's too that right?
You should, you can.
I'm just telling what he said. I still stick to my own opinion.
It's a fire hazard. They wouldn't let you light the plane anyway.
I guess the fire rules allow it.
Is this the, which book is this?
No, I think it's Schubert.
Right.
Okay. Exciting stuff, I told you. And there was a lot of us forgot about that. It's first light and after you light the first light, while lighting the other light. Of course, this is the first light, this is impossible. There's only one light, so you can't. It's a custom being militant sometimes. The minute to light the candles in the shul. Good question. So, how can you light the shul? You said before, you brought a little taller, right? What kind of shul? Because no one lives in shul, right? Well, the old days, they used to live in shul. Standing there making kiddush in shul, right? It's also a problem. Some of the Eretz Yisrael, they don't do it, right? Shtiblach, they don't do it. Yeshiva, they don't do it. Big shuls, Ashkenazi shuls do it, because they used to be in the olden days, there were guests who used to stay in shul. Same with their Chanukah, it's all because of the guests that used to stay in shul.
But
now they don't. You really should cut it out. They once tried to have a kid under my mitzvah to do it. They started yelling at me. So Rav Moshe also said you can have a kid under my mitzvah to do it. I didn't know to protect myself. Under my mitzvah, so I figured no shadow brachah levatal. Rav Moshe said it's okay, and others say no. You have candles and shul. The child made the brach.
No, but
adults. So adults can make the brach, but the Dominican says adults make kiddush. But they used to be guests, and we sort of stick with the old customs, even though the reason no longer applies.
Well, I just
don't need you. Guests who sleep and eat the shul. My shul. They have the shul to have the homeless. Oh, now we're talking. They have homeless and it's okay. Yes? I left that out completely. Oh, you see, I get to read
it.
The custom that women do not do any work while the candles are lit. I wasn't going to mention it, but all right. So they say it only applies to work which you can't do a chalamor, like such as sewing. Doesn't mean you can't do homework.
Okay,
you're allowed to write. This is complicated. Not so easy to put them in their Chanukah. People think Chanukah is a breeze. Fun. Oh, Chanukah girl, I forgot about that. It's a minute that gets Chanukah girl. Give, receive. I must tell you the idea of presence, you know where it comes from. December. You know what I'm going to do? People already forgot that. Used to get gelt. How about a dreidel? Wear that in the Torah? No way, but it's a custom again, so people have a spinach in the dreidel. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Discussed in general, laws of Yom Kippur, Alamayit, Pesach, Hanukkah, and now we continue Purim. Right before Purim, the thing called the Arab of Parshio. Generally speaking, we assume that women are exempt from the obligation of Kriyas HaTorah. They're not obligated to do the laning. However, the big dispute concerning Parsha Zohar. Some say the women are obligated to Parsha Zohar, and some say they're not. What should it depend upon? Yes or no? Well, ordinarily, women are exempt from mitzvah sasei, shezman gerama. It's only once a year. That's the Shabbat before Purim. On the other hand, many poskim maintain the parsha zochus midaraisa min haTorah. And by Torah law, it can be done anytime, once a year. So if it can be done anytime, once a year, that's not called Zman Gerama. So perhaps women should be obligated. On the other hand, keep going from back from hand to hand, we're supposed to remember Amalek, so we can go to war against Amalek and destroy him. But women are exempt from going to war. On the other hand, it says in the Mishnah of Minnesota that by Vilchemis Mitzvah, Afilu Chosen Mechedro Vekala Mechuposa. It's the expression of the Mishnah. And in Vilchemis Rishus, so then we know that not only a woman exempt, but even a chassan is exempt for the first year. Others are exempt. For the Melchemes Mitzvah, there's no exemptions. And on Melchemes Amalek is the Melchemes Mitzvah. On the other hand, there are those who say, the woman doesn't want to fight. Either they say she goes to cook and eat, so it's not like, or as others put it, look. What the chosin needs with the kalam is to sit like an idiot. So it's chosin nechedim, the kalam is chupasa. She doesn't give tea by herself in the book. So it's unclear, a lot of hands back and forth. So what do you do? So the minig is if a woman is able to come to shul, she should. The parsha zohar. Can't, you can't. Rely on the lenient views. In our shul, and in many others, it's a custom that they read Parsha Zohar again after davening is over, because women sometimes walk in late. It happens, they're busy with families, they can't come in at the time for Parsha Zohar. The first reading they read in the afternoon, sometimes also before Mincha. Different readings of Parsha Zohar. Not all rabbis are happy about this. I believe that, I'm not sure if it's in the book, that Rav Moshe Feinstein is a part of the favor against this custom of reading Parsha Zohar. Oh, here it is. I just said it. I remember both men and women are obligated to get Parsha Zohar. Just like this, boom. You get one hand, the other hand, the third hand, the fourth hand. It just says it, boom. Not so clear. He gives a bunch of mouth of compass. However, under no circumstance may I say the Torah be removed from the ark explicitly for the rereading of Parsha Zohar for women only. Who said so? Rav Moshe Feinstein. Royas, they read again for women. We do it. We have a shul, a lot of yekas. We do an asha also. Since Rav Moshe writes, since women are not obligated to kriyas haTorah, you need the whole concept of zocher only applied if you have 10 or at least 6 who haven't heard complaining yet. Women can fulfill the mitzvah of say a parsha zocher from Baal Peh. From printed chumash, so there's no need to take out a sefer Torah. I don't see why, where much is coming from. If there's an obligation to parsha zocher from a sefer Torah for men, and women are obligated to zocher, so why shouldn't they have the same obligation here to hear from the sefer Torah? I don't understand. I don't understand what you're saying. There is an issue, though, which is of significance, and that is that to fulfill Pasha Zohar, it's quoted in the Russian brachas, you have to have a minion, and the minion makes 10 men. So if they read Zohar a second time, there aren't 10 men around, then it's possible that you don't accomplish anything. You need 10 men. The Rush said in the following context, the Gemara says, that you're permitted to violate a prohibition for the sake of a very important mitzvah. Don't take this too far. There's certain limited cases. One of them was that somebody freed a slave. You weren't supposed to free slaves in those years. He freed a slave so that the slave can count for a minion. A new way to make a minion, very creative. And they want to convert, quick, we need a minion. So they freed a slave to make a minion. So the question becomes, wait a minute, minion? What are you minion for? Kedusha, Kaddish, Baruch Hu, Chazaras HaShad, so many Rabbanan. And you violate the Torah prohibitions for the Rabbanan. So the Rosh, no, it's for Pasha Zohar. That is, Pasha Zohar is Minatorah, Pasha Zohar with a minion of Minatorah. So if the women hear the Pasha Zohar, there's no minion, which often there isn't. There's just women around. So according to the Rosh, at the first glance, they haven't accomplished much. So I wanted to give the following explanation. No, I think it's okay. Justify the custom of reading Zohar for women only. On the following grounds. What's the issue? Well, the first question. Why do you require 10 people by Torah law for Parsha Zohar? Very little sense in the first place. What are you 10 people for? Secondly, what's the issue? Whether the women are obligated in Parsha Zohar or not obligated in Parsha Zohar? So let's answer both questions. Why do you need Parsha Zohar have a minion? Because Parsha Zohar is an obligation for Klal Yisrael. Rambam writes, Shalosh mitzvahs nistabu Yisrael b'kisos ha'noritz. Three mitzvahs. To appoint the king, to wipe out Amalek, and to build the base of Mikdash, in that order. These are mitzvahs on the general population, as such, on no particular individual. We have a rule. We discussed last year in different contexts. That women are exempted from mitzvah hatzibur. They don't have to assume a public role if they're involved in public communal mitzvahs. They're exempt. So now, Parsha Zohar can look at it one of two ways. As a private obligation. Or as a precursor to the public obligation of destroying Amalek, so you have to read it in public in order to remind us of this. So I wanted to suggest that if a woman hears Parsha Zohar without a minion, she's okay. Why? Because if the obligation is a communal obligation, then women are exempt completely, because they're not obligated to these kinds of public things. If it's a private obligation, if it's a private obligation. then women are obligated. But then, you know, in a minute. Well, I was going to say, if you use the Gemara's expression, memanusha, either way, if it's private, then they can fulfill it without a minyan. If it's public, the women are partner completely. That's why we can justify the custom that exists in many shuls, my own included, have a second landing for Parshas Zachar for women, even if there aren't 10 men in the room, or there aren't 10 men who haven't heard landing yet. And this goes against the Zachar Rabbisha, but that's a minyan which existed in my shuls before the time I came.
What were the three things?
To appoint the king, destroy Amalek, and build the race of English. It was a communal obligation. Yeah?
I'm a little confused. If the women are
putter,
then why did they hear it?
We don't know. We're not sure if they're putter. We don't know. We don't want to take a chance. We try to have them come and hear it.
So you said it's a public obligation and the women are putter.
Correct.
So, but it's still okay to hear
it. Yeah, it's not a violation in here, right? It's not a violation. It's that they did something which they didn't have to do. We don't know. We try to have them hear the parashas up. Excuse me. Oh, yes. We try not to take out an out of Sefer Torah without an obligation to take out a Sefer Torah. See, with a chiyuv, we take it out. There's no chiyuv, the posts are against taking it out. They're opposed to it. It's a bizarre of the Sefer Torah. That's where Moshe held. Yeah. They put themselves. And the many women who don't hear Parshas Zachar, they stay home, they don't come to shul. Many try, but not everybody manages. And even if they would accept it, it wouldn't make it mandatory, not everyone accept it. Be very careful with Sefer Torah. Don't watch out. I mean, even if we allow Sefer Torah for the Parshas Zachar, it's used just like this. They have their Sefer Torah the first 12 days of the month of Nisan, which is the part of the Nisiyah. These are Chassidish Menachim, which have really no actual basis in Halacha. So you would say, so big deal. So they did it anyway. That's not going to hurt. Well, the Litvak say it hurts. You have no right to take out a Sefer Torah, but not in the context of a formal halachic obligation to read. Each is all. This is a matter of dispute. This was also an issue when it came to the famous women's tefillah issue, which I'm not going to go into right now, but this is one of the many issues that was brought up. Can't take out a Sefer Torah, it's not very, an official kriya, which is, with all the rules and regulations and obligations of Allah. Okay, let's get off Parsha Zachar and talk about Purim, Erev Purim first. Hanis Esther. Hanis Esther is Erev Purim, it's the 13th day of Adar. If Purim is on Sunday, it's pushed up to Thursday. So we assume, although some fast it on Friday. No one fasts on Shabbos. Hanis Esther is considered by the Ramot. Sefer Torah, the first 12 days of the month of Nisan, which is the part of the Nisan. These are Chassidish Menachim, which have really no actual basis in halacha. So you would say, so big deal. So they did it anyway. It's not going to hurt. Well, the Litvak say it hurts. You have no right to take out a Sefer Torah if it's not in the context of a formal halachic obligation to read. Each is all. This is a matter of dispute. This was also an issue when it came to the famous women's tefillah issue, which we're not going to go into right now, but this is one of the many issues that was brought up. Can't take out a Sefer Torah if it's not very, an official kriya, which is, with all the rules and regulations and obligations of Allah. Okay, let's get off Parsha Zachar and talk about Purim, Erev Purim first. Hanis Esther. Hanis Esther is Erev Purim, it's the 13th day of Adar. If Purim is on Sunday, it's pushed up to Thursday. So we assume, although some fast it on Friday. No one cares about Shabbos. Hanis Esther is considered by the Ramah to be more lenient than other fasts. More leading to the fast. Right? Said, if you have a headache, so you don't have to fast. Ramah is very lenient. Ramah considers Tanis Esther to be a pretty flexible day. If you can't fast then, you fast later on, paid up. And then fast later in the month. And if you have a bris, when Tanis Esther pulls out on Thursday when Purim is on Sunday. You want to eat by the bris, so no problem. Eat by the bris and fast instead on Friday. That was very flexible. After all, Tanis Esther is not found anywhere in the Tanakh. It's just a custom. So you can move it around anywhere in the month of Adar. After all, he quotes, the first quote, in the very same siman, it says there's a custom to fast in 3 days somewhere in the month of Adar. Esther fasted 3 days, and they used to fast Bahav, Monday, Thursday, Monday after Purim. It was a custom. So all right, so you can push things around. That's the opinion of the Ramah. One of my sons was bar mitzvah in a year in which Purim fell out on Sunday. Tanis Esther was Thursday, and he was born. His bar mitzvah was Friday. 12th day of Adar. Bar Mitzvah Drush was on the following topic. If someone is Bar Mitzvah on the Friday and fast on Thursday, either he couldn't fast, he was under Bar Mitzvah, or even if he did fast, perhaps the fasting didn't count because he was under Bar Mitzvah, is he required to fast on Friday? If it was a gris mila on Thursday, Ramah says he postponed his fast till Friday, but he couldn't fast Thursday because he got a gris. So he couldn't fast Thursday because he was under Bar Mitzvah. If he did fast, it didn't count. So we had a big receiver that night, Thursday night, and his topic of his brush was this. Do I have to fast tomorrow? You're all having a good time. You already finished your fast. Do I have to fast tomorrow again or not? Everyone was held spellbound. Will he not have to fast the next day after everyone was finished? The answer was no. I'm not sure if the Ramah, the answer was right. The answer was that we don't follow the Ramah. We don't accept this flexible idea of a fast. We assume that the fast has a certain date, and that's it, take it or leave it. You can't just pick fast a different day. And therefore, if a person is planning a headache, it's possible that he would have to fast on Tanis Esther the same as you would on the other 3 fasts. And if you have a bris mila on Thursday, you must fast anyway. You can't just postpone the fast for Friday. But many posts can go against the Ramah in this dispute. I had a different child, a different son, on time assessment. This is exciting. I had a son who was born on the 6th day of Adar. So his bris was on the 13th of Adar, which was time assessment. On a Monday. Purim was Monday night, Tuesday. What do you do about fasting? But the general rule is, the way it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that if you have a bris milah on a plain fast, normal regular fast day, Shiva Sevetamas, the Sarah Vetavis, Tisha B'Av, so on Vidalia, that you have to fast. So what do you do about the wine? You give it to a kid. What do you do about the suda? Make it a night. Only if a fast day is postponed is there a leniency for three people, the father, the moel, and the tzaddik, to eat if they fast day after day. That's what we assume. So what about Tana says, since some say it's more lean than the average fast, not found in Tanakh, so some say that even if it's not a postponed fast, you may eat in the afternoon. Others say no, not allowed. I have the shadow, what should I do? Truth to tell, it would be a matter that either I have to fast, or I don't have to fast. It's a big deal. I say fast, what's the difference? How much big deal to fast? What's the big deal kind of says to the fast? But it got worse, and I saw in one of the farm, you're not allowed to fast. If it's your yontif, you made a bris, you have to eat. Now you can't win. Because it's something you have to eat, because you have to fast. Now what do you do? Go with the flow. Eat. That's what we did. So I invited the tzaddik, and then comes, we had a nice suda. In the Erev Purim, with a fast in the afternoon.
In the morning?
No, not in the morning. The afternoon. After they fast.
Bristles in the morning.
Bristles in the morning. The mild private suda was in the afternoon. Everyone else is fasting at night. They made a big spiel, a big bris. It was Purim night. I mean, there were hundreds of people there. We got some chicken dinner. That's the only bris that I made flesh. Not a new star. I never made flesh chicken bris in the morning. I thought the morning was ham and eggs. How can you have flesh in the morning? I don't understand it. But people do it. Yeshivish, can they do yeshivish in it? Because they're flesh chicken bris. We never did that. But people prefer melchis. Down at night, Purim night. Hashsiya kadas. There was plenty of wine and feet, dancing, singing, music, the last Mishnah Berurah talks about the following halacha. If somebody, Mishanichas Adar, Mamir Simcha, should be happy in the month of Adar. It's a good luck month if you have a deal with a guy, litigation with a guy. Schedule it for Adar. And he ends that if a particular community had a miracle happen to them, they can make their own Purim. Purim, Frankel had a Purim. Various towns have various Purims. We'll discuss, maybe we'll get to it if we have a chance. Maybe a little bit press the time, but I'd like to get to a little bit of the whole fight. And in the Poskim, and the Rabbonim, can you make your own holiday if you're saved from an enemy? As if it's the Six-Day War. You know, I was born to be there, but I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was in big sakana. The guy wanted to drive us into the sea, and we were saved. So do you have a right to make your own quote-unquote Purim, a holiday? Every year, on the anniversary of the day you were saved, to make a yontif. So Mr. Brewer seems to say that for what particular town, the answer is yes. For the whole people of Israel, that's a question. Maybe we'll get to that at a future date. All right. Good. Let's get down to the real meat and potatoes. Purim. An obligation to read the Megillah at night in my day. Very important obligation. When does it begin? After the taste of the Chavit. The three stars come out. We don't try to take too long because people are fasting. So we try to, as soon as the three stars come out, you read the Megillah. How long does that take? So it's a little shul. So we get started. It's usually about 45 minutes or so.
after sunset, approximately, for the Megillah Retin. If someone is very hungry, can't handle it, so you tell them to eat before the Megillah. I have a story about this too. I always have stories. You never know that you did it for the stories. Another son of mine had a bar mitzvah, had a bris on Purim. And he celebrated his bar mitzvah by reading the Megillah. That was his twins. The one that read the Parsha on a Shabbos, the one that read the Megillah, which was gonna be on, which was on a Monday night. That was the year that Rav Moshe Feinstein, the father of Rav, passed away. That Sunday night. Look, I always tell the special kitchen to Rav Moshe for a variety of reasons. That he gave me a bracha once, which I cherish to this day. And our simcha wasn't disturbed. We just finished the Adam Bar Mitzvah, Shabbos, Multi Shabbos, Sunday, everything was good. It was after Sunday night. The Levaya was Monday afternoon, right here, in Lower East Side. So I went, I took my two sons, and the one who was supposed to land came back with a splitting headache. Absolutely, it was sitting outside to get in. Outside, and a whole for hours. He said, he's supposed to land in the Megillah now. I told him, go to sleep. If you have a headache, the first one's go to sleep. I told him, Dabba Mincha B'Yechidus, and go to sleep. He went to sleep, slept for an hour. Well, I don't know exactly how much time. I said, so my wife, you wake him up half an hour after the sun sets, and give him something to eat. Give him something to eat, a little bit of tea to refresh himself. And then tell him to come to shul 15 minutes later for the Kriya of the Gil. But he did, and he landed like, good, perfect. So he took advantage of this halacha that if you can't handle it, you'll add it to the after the fast is over. It's a minig not to eat the left of the Megillah. I can understand that. Perfect, if you get people to know. So if you imagine starting to do it before the Megillah, what's going to happen? No, let me hit the Megillah. So that's why the custom is a very good custom, but you have to make an exception sometimes. You may know that in certain cities they read the Megillah on the 15th of Adar, which is Yerushalayim, the war time of Yeshua ben Nun. Big dispute about how you define Yerushalayim. Oh, that's a biggie. General custom is that the entire Yerushalayim proper reads the Megillah on the 15th, although there are some major communities that are big disputes, such as Hanov, which is over the hill. That's where you were. Hanov is one. Ramot, which is separated by a big hill, if you know the geography, is another one. See, each one has a plus and a minus. Hanov, although you can't see the old city at all, so you can't, impossible. Nevertheless, it's sort of continuous, especially now with the built up to Gilad Shol. On the other hand, Ramot, although it's not continuous, it's a big empty hill, but you can see the old city. It's up on the mountain, you can see straight to the old city. So each one is very complicated. I must tell you that in these parts, some people read the 15th and some read the 14th. Unfortunately, the whole idea was to avoid those who go to do. There should be arguments within the same community. Unfortunately, in these communities, you can't get a straight answer. I know Rashi lives in Hanov, spends firm in America. He's coming to collect money, but he also makes sure they get out. They shouldn't have any problems with when to read the Megillah. Another issue. What if someone travels from place to place? He's the Yerushalmi, now the B'nai Brak, or B'nai Brak in Yerushalayim, and what's in there? Again, a very major issue. Oh, so complicated. can say that the obligation of the 14th is determined by where you are or where you plan to be at dawn on the morning of the 14th. So for example, if you're a Yerushalmi and you come to Tel Aviv and you're there whenever it's reading the Megillah, the night of the 14th, so you plan to take a bus back at midnight to Yerushalayim and spend the next 2 days there, you're not obligated to hear the Megillah that night. You're not a Tel Avivi. It's going to be back in Yerushalayim by the time the dawn cracks.
The dawn of the 14th?
Of the 14th. Other way around, if you're in Tel Aviv and you heard the Megillah on the 14th at night and by day, and now you have to go to Yerushalayim in the afternoon of the 14th. This happens, there are hundreds of people who do this, thousands. Are you obligated to hear the Megillah all over again? So many people say yes, because the morning of the 15th, where are you going to be? Yerushalayim. So you're obligated to read twice. P.S. You can go the other way around too. You can spend the 14th in Yerushalayim, the 15th in Tel Aviv, and have no Megillah. So most people hold. Others say no. But once you're in the 14th, that's it. You can't be hired twice. It's relevant. My son, same son, who knew the Megillah like this, and he's in practice, shake it off like this, with his bar mitzvah. So he was in the yeshiva outside of Yerushalayim, and he came to Yerushalayim on the 14th, and they asked him to lane the Megillah on the 15th. And I told him, I don't think you should lane, because it's a question whether you're chayav or not. And in case he wasn't chayav, it's likely he cannot read the Megillah for someone who is chayav, who was in Yerushalayim ready for the last 3 months. He just came that day. He already read the Megillah the night before, the day before, and that day in the morning. It's a big machlokes. It's hard to resolve. Big disputes. Purim by us can never come out of Shabbos. Can't. Not count. But in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim can. What do we call this? A Purim Mishulash. Triple Purim. Friday, what? They read the Megillah. You know, Matanos Lev Yonin. Shabbos. What? They say Allah Nisim. And they read Vayavo Amolek. And the Suda of the Shalach Mada is when? Sunday. Only if you think everyone agrees to this, you're way off. No one ever agrees. But that's how it's called in Shulchan Aruch. But the Purim Mishulash, the one 3 parts. Friday is the Megillah of the Matanos of Yonim. Shabbos is Al Nisim the Laning. And Sunday is Sudas Purim and Shalach Mas. Triple Purim. Can you imagine drinking a beer after the Shabbos? Yeah. Only drink on Sunday, that's it.
If you said that once, like, you're chayav, you may not, like, be able to, like, read someone again?
If you're not chayav, you are chayav, you can read someone again. If you're not chayav, in other words, if you were ready to discharge your obligation for the Safos, you don't become chayav a second time if you take a bus to Yerushalayim.
Can you read, let's say, like, I know shuls who have, like, 2 Megillahs in the morning, 1...
Not a problem, as long as it's
not a problem. Not
a problem? You need to do the 10 times. Who was out there at the end of the Megillah? Men, women. Remember, just mentioned this last week. Afen ha'yavos ha'anes. Is the obligation identical? Well, the Shulchan Aruch quotes a view which says that women cannot read for men. And there are more that some say that if a woman reads for herself, her bracha is not al mikra Megillah, which is what you hear in shul every year, but rather lishmoa Megillah. This is based on the Rosh who says that women are chayav in shmiya and men are chayav in kriya. Women are chayav to hear and men are chayav to read. Sounds like a bunch of words. What's the difference? Reading and hearing is the same exact thing. Well, it's not exactly the same thing. Women are obligated in Pirsum and Issa, and Pirsum and Issa, according to the Parsha, only makes sense from the perspective of Shmir, but it's obvious that you're listening. It's not obvious that you're listening is the same as speaking, what's called Shemaya Kol, that's not obvious. So by definition, women are only chayav in the Pirsum and Issa aspect, they're chayav only in Shmir. The woman can't wait for a minute because she's only tied with Shemini's tied with Korea and she's not the same level of obligation. So I'm so upset the particular synagogue shall remain nameless. They started off by having a Megillah service for women only. That's how it started. I was upset enough about that, but it separated themselves from the rest of the community. We passed the Megillah, especially drove on Hadras Melech, kept together. But the predictable happened. 3 years later, had a reading of the which women read the Megillah for men. Before the Shulchan Aruch was a no-no. Well, the one view. So I was a little bit upset by that.
If a woman knows how to read,
yeah.
Is it better for her to listen to somebody with Amir
Megillah,
or is it better for her
to read?
No,
it's better she go to shul.
No, assuming she
couldn't. She can't go to shul.
Is it better?
She wants to read herself? Fine. I have no objection. I'm a liberal. I have no objection. Let her read the Megillah for herself. At all. Yeah?
Sorry, I just don't understand.
With the Purim
Shalash,
and
as
I
told you, it falls on Shabbos. Why
don't
we? Yeah.
Because it says in the Mishnah and the Gemara that below Yavo, you can't go past the 15th. So you can read the Megillah the 14th or 15th. There's even a trick which I didn't mention about the 11th, 12th, and 13th. I don't remember the first mission of Megillah, so the opening words. But we don't have that anymore. So you can't go past the 15th. So it's moved up to the 14th. Ah, that's a big question. So how can the Suda be on Sunday? So some say the Suda should be on Shabbos, and some say it should be on Friday. It's a big dispute. We assume it's on Sunday, because the Velo Yava only goes on the Megillah itself. It doesn't go on the on every single celebration of Torah. Shulchan Aruch quotes a custom, a good custom to bring little children to hear the Megillah. Hamza Mishnebruva, the following diatribe. He's about Onoseno or Avim, and he quotes the Megillah, the Na'apavu, backwards. That instead of the children coming to hear the Megillah, what do they do? All they come to is Bang Haman, and it's terrible, and then they disturb the adults, and it's a terrible thing, and they better leave them home. Not only that, but the Mishnah Berurah says everybody should have a Megillah in front of him. And if you can't hear because of the hum, the noise, then you should read along from your own either Tosha Megillah, which is even better if you know how to pronounce the word, or you can play Prince of Kodesh, which we'll get to later. I'm not going to play this now, but kitzer, that if you miss one word of the Megillah, you're not guilty. One word, it's over. But you're permitted to read a minority of the Megillah, a minority, what the Gemara calls by heart, which we can translate as not from a kosher Megillah. So if they bang Haman too early, or they kept banging too late, and you missed the word before or after the word Haman itself, then you can catch up, if you will, and read it along in the print of Chumash until you catch the Valkar. But I wish to come to the Megillah with a print of Chumash. Have it in front of you at all times. Yes?
What if somebody doesn't know when the
tune is the tune is just frills. You can fulfill the entire mitzvah without any tune. Just read it. It's a matter of time.
Also, if
there's
a problem, somebody already was
fulfilled
an obligation, the
answer
that he hasn't.
No, I didn't say that. Someone who fulfilled an obligation in Tel Aviv, when he comes to Yerushalayim, he's not obligated. That means he's not that he just did it. He's not considered a person who's in the part of the whole obligation of the 15th. That's what is the problem. If he's in New York and he read the Megillah once, he can read it twice, five times, 10 times. Because he's still considered the person who's obligated in this obligation. He's discharged it already. Big difference. All right. What if the Megillah has a psul? The Megillah is not written properly. For the same Torah, you miss one letter, boom, out. The Megillah, as long as it's mostly kosher, it's okay. As long as the beginning and the end are kosher. The beginning and the end are no good, then it's, the whole thing is no good. That's reading the Megillah in order. You know, somebody once had a question. They came in a minute late. They missed the first pasuk. They sat there for half an hour, heard the whole Megillah. They want to know, Rabbi, can I just now read the first pasuk? That's not going to do it. What you should have done is read the first pasuk from a plane. So I just caught up with the Baal Torah in the fifth pasuk. You know, just read quickly. Then it would have been all right. Alright, this way I have to read it over here, to get all over again. Not like a movie, you come in the middle, you know, these things come in the middle of a movie, and you see the second half, and you kind of hear the first half, nothing else. So we grow up with little kids, that's how we do the movies.
You should say the first
plus,
like, outside of the
school? Yeah. No, outside of the, I mean, for their own purpose. If you come late, and you can't, if you have another opportunity later, you just read along from your own cryptic permission, catch up to the Malkar.
Well, would he have done otherwise? You just would have... say, oh, I missed
your specific
on the
good, right? That's all good. See, that's it.
So you would say the bracha and you're...
You can do that too. You
say
the three brachas,
and then
catch up.
And then catch up, and then you'll...
Yeah, but you better sure you can catch up. You're going very fast. If you're going faster than you can go, you'll never catch it. Actually, catch it by humma. That's a long way off. If you count one, you have to do two full brachim to catch the Baal Torah by the hummus. Make sure you read it properly. If you miss one word, it's over. One word. Okay. Speaking of this, there is a custom which is quoted here in the Shulchan Aruch to say the Aseres Pnei Haman with the word Aseres with one breath. In one breath. One breath. Start with Chamesh Meofish. All in one breath. Why? To demonstrate that all the ten sons of Muhammad died in one shot. Now, there's an interesting custom, which I don't know if it exists in your shul, that these, when the Baal Torah gets to the point of the ten sons of Haman, he stops. He stops. And at that point, the entire Tzibur says those words. Right? Straight. Plus, sir. And then and only then does the Baal Torah repeat it. Why should that be? Why should that be? So Rabbi Felder quotes this custom from the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't remember what the reason that he gives us. Look inside. I know one reason that's given. The name of the famous Ragachov. I don't know if you've heard of the famous god of Ragachov, who lived the first half of the century in the city of Dvinsk. He was a super genius. And he said like this, that you require to mention all these ten sons in one breath. He claimed that if I hear somebody reading, so we have a principle called Shomea Kaone, that my hearing is as if I read it. So he claims that's only for the basic reading. That if I hear it, it's as if I read it. But it's not as if I read it with one breath. The only way I can read it for the extra dimension of one breath is reading it myself. That's what he said, the Ragachov. I think it's too sharp, frankly. It's, I think you can fulfill any detail of the mitzvah of reading simply by hearing. The best proof is you didn't read from the text either. To read from the text. I can fill the mitzvah reading from the text if you only heard it. But I thought the answer was if he's reading from the text and you hear it, as if you read from the text. Even though you have no text in front of you. I thought the same should apply to the matter of one breath. I have a different reason for this meaning, from personal experience. Anyone ever seen the inside of a Megillah? Never saw a Megillah inside of a seed? Maybe you saw a picture or whatever. The whole Megillah is written out straight, you know, columns. Except for these ten sons of Haman. There it's written a very funny way. The last word of each line is Ve'es, Vav Alasaf. Then the 10 sons are the first word on the line. And in between is a big space for the two words on each line. Ve'es, Parashat Dasa, Ve'es, Dasa, Ve'es, Dalfon, whatever the names are. 10 lines like that. What's the Balkari required to do? Watch, like this. Come here, you followed your eye. Of course, P.S. About 20 years ago, maybe a little less, after the Megillah was read for a morning, sometimes I look at me and says, Rabbi, it's a big problem. What's the problem? The Balkari skipped one of the 10 sons of Mammon. That's a plausible accusation. Why is it plausible? So he's not just reading straight. He's going like this. It's in one breath, so he can't breathe, and he can't take time to look because he's running back and forth. So it's easy, you can just skip a line. It's very plausible. So I told him, it's not true. He said, every one of the 10. I hope that I was right. I think I'm right, I hope so. Otherwise, I didn't fulfill the Megillah that year. Then I said to myself, I bet you that's the reason for the Megillah Yisrael. To read the Megillah, every person reads the 10th of the Megillah himself or herself before. This way, in case someone comes up to the rabbi and claims that the Balkari missed the word, missed the son of Haman, doesn't matter. They already read it first. That's my own original reading, based on that story. Under his breath during the time that the people are reading to themselves. The answer is no. He trusts himself.
So,
what was the question?
If somebody's reading under
their breath. You mean the 10th of the Muhammad?
No.
Oh, I see. I missed the whole question.
Yeah. And then it's okay if, like, Parak Aleph, they heard Shabbat
Korah Right, you're allowed to fulfill the mitzvah partly from the Balkari and partly from your own reading. That's okay.
You said
the majority has to be from the Megillah. The Megillah, if you write it, should not be read over a microphone. Why not? Because it's not his voice. It's a big problem. Since this last year, I wanted to cheer him. Even my wedding, it's not the voice that you hear, it's the electronic voice. It's a big problem. In some shuls, they read the Megillah on a microphone. I'm not happy with that. What's wrong with it?
No, it's a wedding.
A wedding, if the person, the shepherd brought it to the microphone, you don't have 10 people hearing his voice. They only have the microphone. The voice shield. Problem. All right, weddings, Naila, but Megillah is much more serious. Big problem. There were four psukim that are customarily read out loud by everybody. Ish Yehudi. Warach Yachal Me'amelech. Ma'udu Ma'asar of Simcha. And the last pasuk. Yeah, just go, you know, sing along with Mitch. Whenever I ever get along and everyone says it, you say it along too. You should try very hard to read the Megillah with a minion. And I believe this one. The Mishnah Rabbah suggests maybe women count towards this minyan. Rabbah, not a reform rabbi, the Rabbah. That maybe women count towards the minyan for the Megillah. The reason is, it's not a minyan as such, before I turn them, it's a minyan of 10 for Pesumei Nisa, for publicizing the miracles. So some say, well, women are also included in the Pesumei Nisa, as you mentioned before. So that's a matter of dispute. Before the Megillah is read, you say three brachas. Al Mikra Megillah. Shasa Nisim. And Shechiyon. Minik Ashkenaz, we say Shechiyon at the end of the day. Second time. You have in mind not only the Megillah, but also Shechiyon. The Shechiyon of the Megillah is also encompassing and covering Sudas Purim, the Shalat Manas, etc. All the Zitzvah Sayyom. Of course, Taz has in mind everybody in Shul. And the Tzibah should have in mind to fulfill the Mitzvah, they don't, the Baruch, and they don't say Baruch Baruch Shema. The Minig is to stand for the Brachas and sit for the Megillah itself. After the Megillah is completed, there's another bracha, a Rabbah's Rebbein. It's printed in the Siddur. Usually you don't say yourself, you hear it from the Chazan. It's called a Rabbah's Rebbein.
Is the
Baruch Ata Hashem Kenan, a Rabbah's Rebbein, if I've done it, today, I'm not going to stick with saying them. A big dispute exists. Do you say this bracha? There's no minyan. The Rabbah's Rebbein. Some say yes, some say no. Once again, the minyan is to stand for this bracha too. The Rabbah's Rebbein. All right. Davening Purim is pretty straightforward. We had Hala Nisim in Shimon Esrei and in benching. There's no Hallel. Why not? Three reasons are given. Either because the miracle took place in Chutz Laaretz, or because the miracle did not achieve independence. It was still the servants of Ahasuerus. Or because there is a Megillah. The Megillah's, there is a Hallel. The Hallel is a Megillah. The Megillah serves a double function. It's a Megillah, it's also a Hallel. These are the three reasons given why there's no Hallel on Purim. I mean, maybe we'll have a chance to talk about some of the controversies concerning miracles in Eretz Yisrael, such as the Israeli independence and the Six-Day War we spoke about before, in terms of being saved from it. So that the Torah should say, look, these three reasons don't apply. It was in Eretz Yisrael. We achieved independence. And there's no other Megillah. The substitute for Hallel. See from there, Purim, there's no need for an overt miracle to say Hallel. It was no overt miracle, it was just natural. Okay, let's get now to the halachos of the other mitzvahs of Purim. Start from the beginning. What are they? Well, one is Matanas Levionim. You have to give money to the poor on Purim. This is probably the hardest mitzvah to fulfill. How do you find a poor person?
Jewish poor person.
Probably, yeah. Likely. How do you find two? So can you appoint the messenger before Purim to give to the poor on Purim? The answer is yes. Find a poor person, you set aside the money on Purim and give it later, but that's not the ideal. What do you find poor people in? So, in Eretz Yisrael, there are unfortunately many poor people. Well, how do you do it? So the people come around collecting for Purim. I say, we'll take your money and we'll give it out to Purim. They have a big problem then, because you should be given it on Purim, but wait a minute. Purim, you want it to be Purim both for you and Purim and Eretz Yisrael. What is the problem of this man? So they give it out Purim in the afternoon, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you have the money, which is 7 o'clock in the morning in America, in New York. So they find both for the Israelis and for the American. Look at the day, more than 7 hours long. So they can give it out at a time and it's good for both of you. The major issue, they want to collect money and give it out in Yerushalayim. I don't go by that. Because there's no time when it's Purim for you and for them. Because if they give it out on the 14th, it's Purim for you and not for them. If they give it out on the 15th, it's Purim for them and not for you. So I really try to stick to B'nai Brak when it comes to Matanos Lavion. Plenty of people there, believe me. Especially we said there's more, they can use more. The Rambam says that you can fulfill the mitzvah Matanos Lavion with a minimal sum. Some say a puta, some say I have to have enough for a meal. What's that? $5, I'm supposed to have a meal, for a meal, that's a bread, meat, and wine. We'll get to it later. What's that cost? $2, huh? But the Rambam adds that if you have extra money and for him, you should spend it on Matanos Lavionim and not on Shalachmanis or the Suda. Rambam writes, because there's no greater joy than giving poor the money to the poor and this is comparable, says the Rambam, to the Shechina, to Hashem. But Hashem, he says, in the Yeshaya, Lahakos Ruach Shpolim, Lahakos Leiv Nitkoim, that Hashem revives the spirit of the downtrodden, depressed. So I explained once that the Rambam means is that all happiness, which is physical, is by definition limited. How much meat can you eat? How much wine can you drink? After a while, it comes up on you. There's a limit. And the reason why there's a limit is because your body is limited. How big is your stomach? Not that big. But spiritual joy knows no limits. Hanefesh lo timole. Why is that? That's what Rambam explains. Doma l'shchina. Every human being, his neshama, is a part of the divine.